This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Iran says the world needs more Iranian oil, adding that it is ready to improve global energy security away from politics. The family of a slain Palestinian journalist say all investigations have proved that Israel is responsible for her killing. And China accuses the U.S. of conducting tens of thousands of cyber attacks against it, urging Washington to immediately stop these illegal moves. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. As Europe grapples with an unprecedented energy crisis, Iran has expressed readiness to fulfill its role as a major oil producer, free from any politics. Iran's oil minister says the world needs Iran's oil supplies, and the country can improve global energy security while avoiding the political use of energy. Javad Orji pointed to the surge in natural gas prices in Europe, saying that this will fuel demand for oil in the continent. Iran's oil is one of the number of country sectors targeted by U.S. sanctions. The Europeans face rising energy bills and shortages as the cold season approaches. The crisis has been aggravated by tensions with Russia over the war in Ukraine. Moscow has indefinitely halted its gas supplies to Europe over technical issues it blames on Western sanctions. Russia says it will most likely reduce its oil production by around 2% and lower its gas production by some 7%. The coordinator of the talks aimed at reviving the 2015 deal says the recent exchanges between Iran and the U.S. have left him less confident about the prospects of a quick agreement.
But I'm sorry to say that I am less confident today than 28 hours before about the convergence of the negotiation process and about the prospects of closing the deal right now.
Borrell says the EU's draft text was initially well received and parties seem to be converging on a common point. However, he said the latest interaction is diverging. The EU foreign policy chief expressed concern, saying that the whole process is in danger. Iran and the U.S. have been engaged in indirect diplomatic back and forth over the EU draft text to revive the accord. Tehran says its latest response was transparent, constructive, and lawful. It has called on the U.S. to show political will for a deal, saying that it guarantees the removal of sanctions are necessary and the agreement to revive the JCPOA. University professor Fadi Sadi tells us what is keeping the JCPOA revival talks from succeeding.
We have the majority of the U.S. Congress opposing the nuclear agreement, JCPOA. We have people in the Biden administration that oppose it. We have the Israelis and the Israeli lobby that's trying to sabotage what's going on with the talks. And this is the problem that the U.S. has. Instead of basically pointing out to the difficulties that they have. They are starting this blame game against Iraq. And the Europeans generally don't have the will or the ability to stand up to the United States. You know, Europe is going to be facing a very cold winter with gas and oil shortages. Europeans say that they are still in JCPOA, so they can buy oil and gas from Iran or at least try to engage in trade activity that's going to result in less pressure on European citizens. It seems they're willing to have a cold winter and not disobey the United States, which is very strange for Europe.
The Palestinian government has slammed an Israeli report on the killing of journalist Shirin Abu Akleh as a new attempt to evade responsibility for her murder. The spokesman for the president, Mahmoud Abbas, says all evidence, facts, and investigations prove that Israel killed Abu Akleh and that the regime must bear responsibility for its crime. Nabil Abu Rodina added that the Palestinians will follow up the case with all relevant international bodies, including the International Criminal Court. Abu Akleh was fatally shot on May 11th while covering an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Abu Akleh's family says Israel is trying to obscure the truth and avoid responsibility for the killing of the journalist.
As expected, Israel has refused to take responsibility for murdering Shirin. Our family is not surprised by this outcome, since it's obvious to anyone the Israeli war criminals cannot investigate their own crimes.
Abu Akleh's family say countless investigations by media and human rights organizations, as well as the UN, have proved Israel was responsible for the killing. It has demanded a U.S. probe as well as a full inquiry and trial by the International Criminal Court. That after Israel said its investigation showed Abu Akleh was likely shot unintentionally by its soldier. The regime claimed troops conducting operations in the West Bank resorted to live rounds after coming under heavy fire from all sides. It added that soldiers were not able to identify Abu Akleh as a journalist. The regime says it will not launch a criminal investigation into the case. And people in the besieged Gaza Strip have held a big rally to mark the first anniversary of the Gilboa prison break. A year ago, six Palestinians humiliated the Israeli regime through their daring and heroic escape from the maximum security prison. Ashraf Shannon reports.
Palestinians have staged a rally in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza to mark the first anniversary of the Gilboa prison break, also known as the Freedom Tunnel operation. In September of last year, six Palestinian detainees escaped from the Gilboa maximum security prison in occupied northern Palestine. They managed to get out through an underground tunnel in the prison's drainage system. Hamas resistance movement has vowed to secure the release of Palestinian detainees.
On the first anniversary of the heroic Gilboa escape operation, we salute the six prisoners. Securing the release of all prisoners is a top priority for Palestinian resistance factions. The six escapees will be on top of the list of any future prisoner swap deals with the Zionist entity.
The Israeli regime violates all the rights and freedoms granted to prisoners by the Fourth Geneva Convention. The Israeli prison service keeps Palestinian inmates under deplorable conditions. The prisoners have also been subjected to systematic torture and harassment.
Palestinian prisoners escape from Israeli prisons because of the horrible detention conditions. They suffer from inhumane treatment, and hundreds of prisoners are held without charge or trial under the so-called administrative detention.
Palestinian prisoners regularly go on hunger strikes and protest at the regime's administrative detention policy and harsh conditions. Palestinians are calling on the international community to come out of its silence and help Palestinian prisoners.
We call on all international human rights organizations to step in and protect Palestinian prisoners. There are thousands of prisoners, including children and women, in Israeli custody. Palestinian prisoners are suffering from all forms of oppression inside Israeli jails.
Currently, around 5,000 Palestinians, including children and women, are languishing inside Israeli jails. People here consider Palestinians held in Israeli jails as political prisoners and freedom fighters who continue to struggle under the watchful eye of the international community. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Now, China accuses the United States of launching, quote, tens of thousands of cyber attacks and stealing throes of sensitive data.
13 people in the U.S. were involved and directly launched cyber attacks against China. We found more than 60 contracts and 170 electronic documents signed with U.S. telecom operators to build a cyber attack environment.
The Foreign Ministry spokeswoman further said that the data hacked by a U.S. spy agency include a government-funded university with aeronautics and space research programs. She called the move illegal, saying it seriously endangers China's national security and the user's personal data. The Foreign Ministry has urged Washington to immediately stop such acts and provide a clear explanation. China and the U.S. have traded blames of cyber espionage. In the past, the two top economies remain at odds over a host of regional and international issues. To discuss that further, we're joined by Eric Wahlberg, Canadian author and journalist, who's joining us from Toronto. Mr. Wahlberg, if you could please elaborate more on these cyber attacks that both sides, the U.S. and China, have been accusing each other of, and in particular, the most recent cyber attack China is angry about.
Well, this seems to be an escalation. Back in 2015, when the U.S. and China were still reasonably friendly, that was the tail end of the Obama regime, they came to an agreement that they would not have cyber attacks either way, both China and the U.S. So in a sense, the U.S. was acknowledging that it was doing this too, and supposedly they were going to stop. But of course, things have degenerated since then. There's no trust east-west, and China, of course, has been very keen to get all the industrial technology it can from the West, and that has certainly involved cyber attacks. Of course, the U.S. says we don't do that. We just are concerned about our security. But it's what does that mean? It doesn't. So there's no definition for security, and it's just the U.S. passing the buck. So I don't know that with the way relations are degenerating, there's going to be more and more of this cyber attacks. It's becoming really. And it just shows how very fragile this kind of global economy, all based on computers that can be attacked, that this is not a very safe way of running the world. So I think it's going to require a rethink about just how much of this globalization we really want, because it's the globalization itself that creates the situation where these attacks become lethal. So I think it's going to be a wake-up call for not just China, but for everybody.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eric Wahlberg, a Canadian author and journalist from Toronto. An entire community in the U.S. has been left without safe tap water after floods damaged a long-troubled treatment plant, causing it to break down. Now the city of Jackson, Mississippi, state's capital, has declared a state of emergency. This catastrophe has sparked widespread concerns over firefighting, sanitation, and residents' health, but the issue runs deeper than just dirty water and what's been called environmental racism in the U.S.
a catastrophic failure, but one that didn't just happen with the Pearl River flooding, one which has in fact been ongoing, which includes the lack of maintenance of water pumps. In 2021, water pipes froze, leaving people with no water. Later in July 2022, residents were advised to boil water after concerning test results. Some even say that for the past years, there has not even been a month where citizens in South Jackson particularly have not gone a weekend or 2 days or even sometimes a week with either no flow of water or one without water pressure. Now, after nearly 1 week of misery, the Federal Emergency Management Agency director says it's too early to say when the people there will have clean running water. But the situation in Jackson had been alarming for years now, and the infrastructure had clearly been worn out. So why is it that officials there are just realizing that something needs to be done?
There is an issue in the United States called, quote, environmental racism, unquote. And environmental racism is quite common, quite prevalent in the United States. You see this not only with regard to water supply, you also see it with regard to where garbage dumps are located. You see it with regard to where toxic waste dumps are located. So what you see as we speak in Jackson, Mississippi, is no shock, it's no surprise, it's utterly predictable, because we also know that Mississippi happens to be the state in the United States that has the most sizable percentage of Black residents.
Mississippi's largest city is more than 80% Black, and this has led many to believe that this is why the city's water system has been neglected for decades. It is also one of many Black-majority U.S. cities suffering from a major water problem. But until Jackson can restore its water treatment plant and fill its aging pipes, residents will have to make do with boiled water, bottled water, and plenty of patience.
As Europe grapples with an unprecedented energy crisis, Iran has expressed readiness to fulfill its role as a major oil producer free from any politics. Iran's oil minister says the world needs Iran's oil supplies and the country can improve global energy security while avoiding political use of energy. Javad Oji pointed to the surge in natural gas prices in Europe, saying that this will fuel demand for oil in the continent. Iran's oil is one of the numbers of the countries that have been hit by U.S. sanctions. This as Europeans face rising energy bills and shortages as the cold season approaches. The crisis has been aggravated by tensions with Russia over the war in Ukraine. Moscow has indefinitely halted gas supplies to Europe over technical issues that it blames on Western sanctions. Russia says it will most likely reduce its oil production by around 2% and lower its gas production by 7% this year. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
The Mar-a-Lago resort and its owner, former U.S. President Donald Trump, have become one of the biggest concerns of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, with FBI agents raiding the Trump resort in Florida, known as Mar-a-Lago, to discover and seize confidential documents that Trump took with him after leaving the White House. This home and its owner became one of the biggest challenges and security concerns for the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. The 114-room house is currently the focus of a U.S. Justice Department's investigation into Trump's illegal seizure of presidential documents. Experts believe that the stealing and archiving confidential and national information of the U.S. government by Trump can be seen as an obstacle for him being approved as a candidate in the next U.S. presidential election and even create complex legal problems and challenges for him. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Reuters news agency explains more about this big scandal in U.S. intelligence community. It says, some security experts warn the seizure of classified U.S. government documents from Donald Trump's sprawling Mar-a-Lago retreat spotlights the ongoing national security concerns presented by the former president and the home he dubbed the Winter White House. A search warrant shows Trump is under federal investigation for possible violations of the Espionage Act, which makes it unlawful to spy for another country to mishandle U.S. defense information, including sharing it with people not authorized to receive it. Former DOJ official Mary McCord said the Justice Department's search warrant raises concerns about national security. McCord said clearly they thought it was very serious to get these materials back into secured space, adding even just retention of highly classified documents in improper storage, particularly given Mar-a-Lago the foreign visitors there and others who might have connections with foreign governments and foreign agents, creates a significant national security threat. Trump, in a statement on his social media platform, claimed the records were all declassified and placed in secure storage. However, McCord said she saw no plausible argument that he had made a conscious decision about each one of these to declassify them before he left. She said after leaving office, he did not have the power to declassify information. Bloomberg News reported U.S. federal prosecutors are likely to wait until after the November election to announce any charges against Donald Trump if they determine he broke laws. The unprecedented prospect of bringing charges against a former U.S. president is creating intense scrutiny of the Justice Department in the aftermath of its search of his home at Mar-a-Lago. A separate DOJ probe is focused on his effort to overturn the 2020 election, which he lost to President Joe Biden. Under longstanding department policy, prosecutors are barred from taking investigative steps or filing charges for the purpose of affecting an election or helping a candidate or party, traditionally 60 days before an election. This year, that would be by September 15th, which makes it unlikely anything would be announced until after November 8th. The FBI executed a search warrant on Trump's home on August 8th when agents removed 20 boxes of material containing 11 sets of classified material. Announcing charges against Trump prior to the election likely would be seen as a political ploy by his supporters to damage him and his endorsed candidates and could fuel unrest in the country. For example, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham recently warned during an interview on Fox News There literally will be riots in the street if Trump is indicted for mishandling classified information. Trump immediately posted the clip to his social media site. The British daily The Guardian, in an article, sheds more light on the issue, saying on August 8, when dozens of FBI agents fanned through Mar-a-Lago bearing a search warrant issued by a federal judge, Trump lashed out. He said, "These are dark times for our nation," describing the legally authorized search as a raid and portraying it as a blatantly political attack akin to one of those broken third world countries. Over the past 4 weeks, a cascade of information has been released that tells the other side of the story. It transpires that the unprecedented nature of the FBI search was posited on even more unprecedented behavior of the 45th president of the United States. Trump has been archivally challenged to coin a phrase for many years. The roots of his refusal to abide by normal rules relating to documents stretch back at least to his refusal to disclose his own tax returns during the 2016 presidential campaign, a resistance to accepting public access to his personal papers that is the mirror image of his current claim that presidential records from his time in the White House belong to him. Ruth Ben Gitt, a New York University history professor who is author of Strong Men, Mussolini to the Present, and publisher of the Lucid newsletter about threats to democracy, says this blaring of public and private is central to his autocratic style of leadership. Ben Gitt said, "For Trump, records are not just documents. They are a measure of control, leverage over enemies and over his inner circle. This kind of leader doesn't recognize the division between public and private. They have a propriety mode of exercising power in which everything is theirs." By June 2018, such propriety behavior was expressing itself in the White House. Politico reported that Trump was routinely tearing up official records rather than filing them for safekeeping in the National Archives, as he was legally obliged to do. The U.S. government says it is in possession of evidence showing that former President Donald Trump seemed to try to obstruct a probe into the discovery of classified documents at the former president's residence. The Justice Department says it had evidence that classified documents were deliberately concealed from the FBI when it tried to retrieve them in June from Trump's Florida estate, prompting an unprecedented search of his home. Prosecutors laid out their evidence of obstruction of justice, saying that Trump aides both falsely certified in June that the former president had retained all the government records he had stored in his home after leaving the White House in January 2021. It also revealed that Trump lawyers explicitly prohibited government personnel from opening or looking inside any of the boxes inside the storage room when FBI agents first traveled to his Palm Beach Mar-a-Lago resort in June to retrieve their records. After the FBI's raid on the Trump's resort, many supporters in some American cities gathered in front of FBI's headquarters to express their protest and demand the dissolution of this institution. Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York and one of Trump's friends and lawyers, also said in an interview with the New York Post that if Trump wins the 2024 election, he will attack Joe Biden's house. While calling the FBI's attack on Trump's home in Florida political, he said if Trump wins the election, he will use the FBI to retaliate and attack Biden's house. Therefore, it can be said that considering the recent scandals in Trump's Mar-a-Lago house and the intelligence disorders inside the former U.S. administration, there is no clear future for Trump to become a candidate and win the 2024 elections. It can also be said that these events will have important effects on the incoming U.S. midterm elections.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss about the problems, questions, and issues you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Today in our studio, we have with us our guest speaker, Professor Salman Naqvi. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Professor Salman Naqvi is a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University and also a researcher on the Islamic issues in the Hawza Ilmi Afka. So we have been talking about the domains of behavior and the types of relationships. In the previous episodes, we have been talking about the relationship with environment. And you said that when we are talking about the relationship with environment, apart from teaching our children to take care of the environment, we also need to teach them basically how to explore in the universe. And you said that the concept goes beyond science. There is philosophical reasoning that needs to be taught. So how do we inculcate philosophical reasoning in our children?
Yes, exactly. This is a very important thing. We must take guidance from the Holy Quran. As I mentioned, the Holy Verse, that Allah Almighty wants to tell us that everything that you see, what I have created,
I created it for you. It's at your disposal.
I created it for you. It's for your well-being. You have to discover it. You have to harness it and employ it and utilize it for the betterment of mankind.
Yeah.
Under the umbrella of wilaya.
True.
The Quran says, I want you to discover, when it talks about tadabbur.
Afala tadabburun.
In the Quran, it's talking about understanding the signs of
contemplating.
Allah. Contemplating, trying to understand, to discover.
Yeah.
It's philosophical and scientific research going together.
Yes.
I mean, a scientist will look for the cause. The philosopher will say, you're looking for a cause. Why are you looking for a cause?
Yeah.
There's something very foundational beyond that, that cannot be proven by experimentation. So those foundational issues have to be understood. For example, when you say, is it possible for this room to be dark and lit together? It's either dark
or it's lightened up.
Or it's lightened up. It
yeah.
can't be together, both of. This is something which we take for granted.
Yeah.
But there's a philosophical understanding of that.
Yeah.
If that philosophical understanding, of course, I'm not talking about the terminology that is employed in philosophy.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the concepts, the foundational concepts, that have to be taught to the child. We ourselves have to understand, because look, many of our discussions and disputes go into polemical debates.
Yeah.
Because we do not accept many foundational things. We have to understand and accept those foundational concepts and propositions to be able to build upon those arguments and our reasoning.
Yeah.
The child must understand those foundational issues, so he does not, his thinking and his reasoning does not contradict with that.
Okay.
Contradiction itself is a philosophical and a logical issue.
Okay.
What is contradiction?
Yeah.
Two things of an opposite nature cannot exist together, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
For example, this table in front of us, it cannot be both green and both red.
Yes.
It's either green or it is either
red. Oh, it's red. Yeah. So that contradictory nature also...
That's contrasting, comes, but yeah. We have contradiction.
So that way we are even
so
teaching
about... I mean, these foundational issues have to be inculcated in our... When we talk about things, when we discuss issues,
yeah.
We discuss, we debate, we should be employing proper reasoning.
Yeah. And that's actually something that may also help our children to come out of hypocrisy, not develop a hypocritic nature. I'll be talking more on that with you after a short break, dear listeners. Stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are talking about how do we teach our children the philosophical reasoning. Professor Nakavi, you told us a very important point over here that either a room is bright or it's dark. Two things cannot happen at the same time. And something like that is also explained in Surah Ahzab, which the verse says that, in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that, I have provided you with one heart, because one heart contains one rule. Your heart can be either Husseini or it can be Yazidi. It cannot be a Husseini and a Yazidi heart at the same time. Yes.
Exactly, a very good example you have given. Actually, the essence of that philosophical reasoning can be understood in the martyrdom of Imam Hussein also.
True.
And the sacrifices given by the Ahlul Bayt.
Yeah.
It was for the sake of the love of Allah Almighty. They gave that sacrifice.
Yeah.
But love of Allah Almighty cannot be separated and divorced from the intellectual level of understanding that goes beneath it.
Okay.
The roots of our understanding of Islam and the purpose and the mission of Islam is intellectual. For example, when we talk about the sacrifice of Imam Hussein, we want to give a picture that Imam Hussein did it just for the sake of love. It was love. No, beyond that love and beneath that love,
exists
that
the intellectual, the intellectual reasoning,
level. You
logic.
Cannot divorce the intellectual level from the emotional
okay. And
the spiritual levels.
Okay.
So, when we talk about our relationships with Allah Almighty, when we talk about wilaya, when we talk about all our relationships, when we talk about love,
yeah. Compassion,
when we talk about emotions and feelings. But the underlying thought process cannot be overlooked.
All right.
And that is, we have to bring about a marriage. We have to make our child understand, look, this love and this sacrifice that Imam Hussein had was based on sound reasoning.
Yeah.
It was based on sound reasoning. And every sound reasoning has a strong foundational basis.
Yes.
And the natural laws of thinking are employed there, applied there.
Yes.
And without that, you cannot build up that rational understanding.
Okay.
even the scientific understanding of the universe has this underlying layer of philosophical understanding.
Okay.
And foundational reasoning. So this, if we are able to bring about this sort of understanding in the child through our discussions, through our debates, through our readings, through our interaction with ulama, we have to develop that thinking. The problem which we are facing today is that children are thinking of science as God.
All right. Oh,
why do we do this? Can science prove that? Can science do that? No. Science
is limited.
Is limited.
All right. So I will talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and we're talking about the concept of philosophical reasoning and how we can inculcate this concept in our children. Professor Naqavi, you told us that when we are, for example, teaching our children the story of Karbala, we don't have to just show our children that this was an emotional story, this was just an emotional relationship of Imam Hussein alayhi salam with God, but there was an underlying process that was the philosophical reasoning.
Yes, exactly. When we talk about Imam Hussein and why he did not accept to pay allegiance to Yazid, he gave a very basic, very intellectual, very reasonable answer, very beautiful answer. Mithli la yubayi'u mithlah. A person of my caliber, of my competency, of my stature, of my a person who has such attributes as me, knowledge and skills and many other things which are required for being the imam, the worthy leader of the society, cannot pay allegiance and bow down to someone who is not worthy, like Yazid.
Okay.
Not only he does not have the qualities to be a good leader, he has negative traits.
Yeah.
And therefore, that is the intellectual understanding. That is the basis that Imam Hussein is to telling us. Look, go for worthy leadership.
Okay.
That is something very intellectual. All intellectual people, rational people of the world will accept that.
Yeah.
Based on that, we need to have a mission statement. We have to introduce a system of governance which is based upon worthy leadership.
Yeah.
Even if a person who is not worthy has a popular mandate, people vote for him, people go out for him.
So Imam is teaching us.
Imam is telling
worthy.
Us popularity is not enough.
Yeah.
Popularity is not enough. You have to. Popular support is important when it is for the competent person. Imam Ali, we have to make our children understand, look, Imam Ali was the Imam. He should have been the Khalifa after the Holy Prophet. We believe as Shia Muslims that the person who was worthy of being the successor of the Holy Prophet was Imam Ali because of his worthiness, because he was competent.
And it was even announced.
The announcement was based on the fact that he was worthy of it.
Worthy, yeah.
I mean, that is the underlying principle that we have to teach our children.
Yeah.
Competency, worthiness.
Yes.
As I said, even we...
So when you're just
when we obey God because he's worthy of it.
Yes.
So we have to make our children understand, look, you go for caliber, competency. You go for the truth.
Exactly. حَتَّى يَتَبَيَّنَ
أَنَّهُ الْحَقِّ that we show our signs in the heavens, in the souls, to make you understand that Allah is the absolute truth, because He's worthy.
Worth of that.
And this is what has to be inculcated in our children.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Professor Naqavi, for being with us and providing us such meaningful information regarding the philosophical reasoning that needs to be taught to children. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen again, you can go back to our official website. That's www.parstoday.com. You can go to the tab, Call of Islam, and out there you can search Islamic Upbringing, and you'll find all our episodes over there. Thank you so much for being with us once again. And in case you have any questions, you have any issues, you have anything you want to ask about the Islamic upbringing of your children, you can feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until another session, fi amanallah, God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden's wrong policies have caused many immigrants to be harassed and tortured at the American borders and even spend a long time in detention centers. Many analysts believe that Joe Biden is doing the same wrong Trump's policies against immigrants. These policies have put the lives of many immigrants in danger, and even human rights groups have reacted to U.S. President's immigration policies. In this regard, we have taken a look at some of the world press and news agencies to shed more light on the issue. Stay tuned, please. The Truth Out website explains more about the wrong immigration policies by the U.S. administration, saying hopes for abolishing one of U.S. most harmful immigration policies, including deportation following incarceration in the criminal legal system or double punishment, are withering as the Biden administration continues to snub immigration reform. According to a recent Syracuse University report, 3,481 immigrants are currently in removal proceedings because of criminal charges, and many of them were seized upon their release from prison before they could take even a single breath in freedom. And while that number is on track to be less than last year, advocates warn that without changing the underlying laws, rules, and policies, what goes down this reporting period can go up in the next. Heidi Altman, Director of Policy for the National Immigrant Justice Center, NIJC, told Truthout, "The numbers are still astronomical in terms of sheer numbers of people deported from their loved ones after a conviction or arrest," adding, "There are many ways this could be done even without congressional action, through reversal of harmful Board of Immigration Appeals precedent, through rulemaking to allow greater access to bond hearings for those detained on the basis of criminal convictions, through processes to allow those unjustly deported to be returned, and or through policy memos and training that requires officers to consider the racial bias inherent in the criminal legal system when making detention and deportation decisions. But none of that has happened. Instead of being returned to their families and communities for re-entry to society, they are often held 6 months or more in private for-profit detention facilities and then deported to countries where they may not have lived for decades. Know no one and do not speak the language." WTTW Channel 11 is a PBS member television station in Chicago, Illinois. The TV channel's website has published an article concerning this issue, saying the U.S. Supreme Court has certified its ruling allowing the Biden administration to end the Migrant Protection Protocols policy, better known as Remain in Mexico. The policy was a part of former President Donald Trump's border policy, forcing migrants seeking asylum in the U.S. to wait in Mexico for hearings. In June, a Supreme Court decision overruled a lower court that forced the policy to be reinstated in December. But while President Joe Biden previously tried to end the policy, there has been little comment thus far on when his administration might officially follow through. Gladys Molina Alt, executive director of the Young Center for Immigrant Children's Rights, said she has spent time along the U.S.-Mexico border and the situation remains very difficult for the migrants in limbo. Molina Alt said, "What I have seen on the ground is families, parents, we talked about having to make a difficult decision on whether they remain in Mexico waiting for their cases to be processed or make that difficult decision to have their kids across the border by themselves while they remain in Mexico. So family unity is something that we've seen be an issue at stake on the ground." She said, "We've also heard both who are in these MMPP camps talk about the security issues that they face, the kidnapping that happens, the rapes that happened, the violations of human rights for them as migrants in Mexico that take place. In addition to criticisms from the human rights organizations of the Joe Biden administration in continuing Donald Trump's wrong policies toward immigrants, some American officials have also criticized Biden administration's wrong policies toward immigrants. According to a New York Post report, the chief of the U.S. Border Patrol blamed President Biden's wrong immigration policies for sparking the surge of illegal immigrants crossing into the U.S. Raul Ortiz made the frank admission that the administration's wrong policies are to blame in a recorded deposition that is part of a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security by Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody. TheWhistleblower.org says, while many public health experts urge the Biden administration to end the use of Title 42 in immigration cases, it remained government policy to do so until April, when the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, finally announced its termination. But just days before the CDC order was to take effect on May 23rd, a Trump-appointed general judge in Louisiana blocked the lifting of Title 42, claiming it violated administrative law and would cause irreparable harm. Yet opposition to the lifting of Title 42 isn't solely coming from Trump appointees and Republicans. For example, the Public Health and Border Security Act, which would require all COVID-19-related national states of emergency to be lifted before Title 42 is officially terminated, was introduced in April by Senators James Lankford, Republican of Oklahoma, and Kyrsten Sinema, Democrat of Arizona, along with nine other senators, including Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia. Dawn Wooten, a single mother of five, used to work as a full-time nurse at the Irvine County Detention Center in Osceola, Georgia, which was operated by the private contractor LaSalle Corrections. Though she was not officially terminated by her employer, she wasn't called back to work after she began speaking out about unimaginable atrocities being committed against immigrant detainees there. Wooten shared disturbing accounts of medical misconduct at the center, including the refusal by authorities to screen detainees for COVID-19 and the destruction of medical records. Unfortunately, these types of abuses at detention facilities aren't isolated incidents. According to Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CRU, and the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU of Florida, the Glades County Detention Center in Moorhaven, Florida, has a history of radicalized violence, sexually abusive behavior, medical neglect, and inhumane treatment of immigrants. CRU and the ACLU of Florida filed a federal lawsuit in April against ICE and the National Archives and Records Administration, accusing Glades officials of deleting surveillance videos that could verify claims of abuse by detainees. The Truth Out website wrote in June 2021, Illinois passed laws that banned police from assisting ICE in making arrests and ended private civil detention facilities in the state. Following its lead, other states are starting to move legislation to protect their immigrant communities from double punishment. Most notably, the California legislature is considering the Vision Act, and advocates far and wide are excited that its potential passage in a populous and politically important state could lead other states to close the prison to deportation pipeline and further decriminalize immigration. The Vision Act would prohibit collaboration with ICE to remove people who are being released from prison to jail. Under it, immigration status will no longer be used as a determining factor in how people are treated by state and local agencies and its courts. It would also abolish certain discriminatory record-keeping and reporting requirements. According to the latest published statistics, U.S. authorities arrested more than 221,000 people at the Mexican border in May alone, which is the highest number in 1 month in more than two decades. Experts have cited extreme poverty, rampant violence, and natural disasters caused by climate change in Latin America, especially in the countries of El Salvador, Guatemala, Haiti, and Honduras, for the rampant increase of immigrants to the American borders.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.